Welcome to the Leisureman Podcast on NBC Sports. I'm Paul Papps. He's Andrew Perloff. All right, Perloff, let me set the scene. It is Wednesday afternoon at 3 p.m. when we're taping the podcast. We're about 28 hours to the draft, so a lot of people will hear this before the draft, some after, which will be funny because our takes on the draft could look really, really silly if you listen to this on Friday morning.
Well, I mean, I don't think either of us are going to say this is definitely going to happen.
Right.
We're not really the this is definitely going to happen guy. And it's funny, with this draft, nobody is that guy. I haven't heard anyone say this is definitely what's happening in one. Everyone's hedging their bets.
All right, we're going to get to a lot of draft talk. And in about 10 minutes, our buddy Kelly Acoin, he's the actor who plays Dollar Bill Stern in the TV show Billions on Showtime. If you haven't watched Billions, it's a sure thing. They're in the middle of season three, and the show's just getting bigger and better. It's got Damian Lewis. It's got your boy.
Paul Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti. I blank on Paul Giamatti. And, you know, Damian Lewis has been in everything. He's having a great Homeland. He was in Band of Brothers.
Yeah, yeah. No, Billions is definitely like a hot show right now. It's so funny because when we were growing up, we actually had network shows. Now it's like, what's the hot cable or Netflix show of the day? And let's talk about it.
Yeah, so Kelly Acoin, the actor, plays Dollar Bill Stern. Join us in a few minutes. But your point about the draft, I'm very excited about the first probably hour and a half of this draft because it feels like, is everything up in the air, or is the media portraying it like everything's up in the air with who's going where? Because those are two different things.
Explain, because obviously...
Do the teams know what they're doing, and they're just messing with the media, and it just keeps the thing churning?
Well, you can't really. I mean, after maybe pick two, you're dependent on what the teams before you do.
Because you only need one team to change the script.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the teams... I do think it's a little like the Kevin Costner movie Draft Day, where you're making decisions on the fly. Although that was a little
Draft
ridiculous.
Day was beyond ridiculous.
Yeah.
As much as I wanted to like that movie... It was so far-fetched, even for a sports movie. I know sports movies have to be far-fetched because you're actually playing to a non-sports crowd when you do these movies.
Well, it's funny, but it was far-fetched in some ways, but it was less dramatic than the actual draft. Like, they never would have had a Laramie Tunsil situation in that movie Draft Day.
Right, but Dennis Leary, the coach, says he threatens to quit. He actually says, I quit because I can't coach this team. When he trades up and down in the draft, he goes, I'm quitting. He goes, stick around. See if you like this team. And then
yeah. It's definitely not how it works. But I think they moved up for a linebacker at number one.
Right.
Or was it the running back?
No, they went with the linebacker,
right.
Mac.
Yeah, who's a lot like Roquan Smith out of Georgia. So it's like the Brett, who, by the way, is most likely the best player in this draft.
Okay, let's analyze draft day.
Yes.
With the top two of the top five picks in the draft, they took an inside linebacker, which that position has been so devalued. An inside linebacker would never go in the top 10.
Was he inside or was he outside on 3-4? Depends what scheme you're in.
Let me check.
I think he was a will linebacker. No, you're right. He was definitely a thumper linebacker. He wasn't a pass rusher. So
yeah, and they took him, and that position, you would never take a middle linebacker in the top 10 picks anymore. Even a Luke Kuechly, he's not going to go till 15. And then they take a running back with the fourth pick overall because his dad played there.
Was it four that they got running back?
Let's break down the draft picks on draft day because no one's doing that. The Ringer looked at this last year.
Yeah,
and said Kevin Costner makes a ton of mistakes. You know, they sent the number 2-7 pick to get the first overall pick. Then they don't take Bo Callahan, the quarterback that they needed because they had off field concerns.
Yeah, because no one went to Bo Callahan's birthday party, which I totally buy. So, so they got a running back. This is a bad draft. But you know what's funny? The Browns might go that actual direction
okay.
and be like the movie.
We're going to do two things here. We're going to look at the first two picks in the draft. You're going to give your best guess of what they will do, and I'm going to tell you what they should do because I think I like to say what they should do.
Well, we got an pre-show argument about this. I think what they should do out of not just you, anybody has zero value. Because what are you saying? Like, they should do this?
I'm saying the Browns, if they were smart to win football games long-term, should do this. Guessing what they will do is interesting, but ultimately it only lasts till tomorrow night.
Right. So it's interesting. Like, every draft expert puts out a list of their favorite players or who they think are the best guys. And then you'll put out a mock draft. Who are they going to pick? Nobody reads who Todd McShay's favorite players are because it's just his opinion. It holds no weight. He can't be wrong. You can't be wrong with your should. I can be wrong. There's much more stakes.
I could be much more wrong because if I advocate that they should take Josh Rosen number one overall and he's a complete bust, then my pick is complete bust.
It's going to be 3 years from now. No one's going to remember that.
Right, but that's what Mel Kiper always said. I used to work with Mel Kiper back in the day. He goes, you should judge me 4 years from when I make my picks. Because Mel, back in the day, he was a what the should they do, not will they do.
Yeah, and the media and ESPN said nobody cares what you think they should do. They don't even do that anymore. But the other thing is, too, like you can't be wrong, but how are you going to know more than these professional men who've watched football for 30 years, have every tape, have full detective reports on all these top 30 guys? There's no way you know anything.
I absolutely know as much as anybody doing anything with football because these, I think they're paralyzed by, you know, paralysis by analysis.
Yeah.
I think that happens sometimes. And they're talking about tight hips and all that stuff.
Where
would Jerry Rice be ranked if he was coming out?
Forget all the tight hips. They know personal information about these guys that you're right. He would have fallen, but I mean, he did fall. But they know so many things about these guys' lives that you have no idea.
I think they know just the surface stuff about these guys' lives, and they can't predict something that none of us could predict, how an athlete will respond to becoming a millionaire. Will they work harder or will they work less? And that's unpredictable.
Right. You know, I genuinely disagree with this. I think there's a whole layer of information that you're not privy to. So your opinion of should is sort of like you're looking historically at what's worked in the past, but you don't really know these
I base mine on watching a lot of college football, which is
but
all I really
But how many of these guys did you really study? Did you really watch?
Study or watch?
Why? By just watching for three games, you know, or four games on national television, there's no way you could really get to know them as pro players.
True, but I can know what they do on a football field and how they dominate whatever level that they're at. And I think a lot of times we look at all these other intangibles and 40s and forget how kick-ass was he on the football field. Like, you're forgetting that Nick Chubb is the second leading rusher in Georgia history, and he had to do something well to do that. But people are saying, well, this guy is a niche power back who should be maybe a late second rounder.
Yeah, but, I mean, he tore up his knee. So that's the other thing, health.
Todd Gurley tore up his knee. How is Todd Gurley working out?
Yeah, but health. You don't know health. You don't know where he is. They have had a doctor getting in there. And honestly, like, and I just don't think that you have seen what they've seen. I think there's so much.
I know I haven't seen what they've seen.
Yeah. But and even these guys, I mean, you've watched the quarterbacks and skill position players, but have you really watched Tremaine Edwards, a linebacker out of Virginia Tech, and studied him? No. There's no way you would possibly have access to that.
But I also go by, I have like a different strategies in my head, which I think would be smarter for a team. I think you should build a team from your line out and not the other way around. You have to do whatever you can to get a quarterback. But if you could have a good offensive line, you can make any quarterback decent. I remember when Rex Grossman led the Bears behind a really good offensive line, they went to the Super Bowl because they had this really Olin Krutz and all these different really good offensive linemen back with the 05 Bears. And Rex Grossman led them to the Super Bowl because he had totally great blocking and it maxed out his abilities. And yes, you need a good to great quarterback to do anything in this league, but I believe that if you could have the best offensive line in football, there's almost nothing you can't do on offense.
So last year, Trubisky came along. Do you remember what your reaction was?
I was surprised that they traded up for Mitch Trubisky, who had done very little in college against big time in big games, because I thought he was an incomplete player. I was surprised in the preseason that he was such a good rollout guy. And when the season, he kind of came back to earth during the regular season. You know, they have no wide receivers and no tight ends. They have a very good running game and a pretty good above average offensive line. If they have a couple receivers, this is the year Mitch Trubisky should jump or stagnate.
Right.
But I was impressed of what I saw about
him
adjusting.
But I'm talking about, like, on draft day, if you're talking about what they should do.
I thought they should have taken – I was with you that Deshaun Watson was a proven commodity.
Right.
There's no questions about what he could do.
Okay, let's dive into this. I'll say what I think is going to happen. And then you say what you think they should do. I like this. So we'll take two different approaches. Obviously, I'm going to look worse because I'm going to be immediately wrong. There's zero chance. There's just no way I won't be wrong. You're taking a blind guess.
Yeah, you probably have like four people you could choose from for the Browns' number one overall pick.
Yeah, you have three, probably. I'll go, okay, everyone has Darnold, Josh Allen, or Baker Mayfield. I'll take a flyer on Baker Mayfield, number one.
Do you think anyone has Saquon Barkley in the mix?
Nobody. I mean, it definitely could happen, but I haven't seen any mock drafts with that.
So you think they should take Sam Darnold?
No. I think they'll take Baker
you
Mayfield.
You think they are going to take Mayfield? And it's been sneaky?
And I'm just basing this on everything I read it seems like everything's leaning Mayfield.
Now, is this because their GM Dorsey loved Russell Wilson
yes.
back in the day?
Well, yes.
I saw that story.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, one guy who we had on the show recently, Nate Segura, who is the main Cleveland Browns broadcaster, has been tweeting all along, it's either Mayfield or Darnold. Mayfield or Darnold. And he went double down today. He's like, I have no inside information. I just know that it's been Darnold or Mayfield the whole time. And And I'm just going on math. There's so many reports that it's not Darnold that I'm like, well, Mayfield's remaining, and Josh Allen's just too risky. So I settle on Mayfield, but I would not be surprised.
How do the Browns not think about the criticism they're going to get for taking Baker Mayfield, one of the riskier players in recent history, and coming just 4 years after taking Johnny Manziel, a smaller quarterback, even though I think Baker Mayfield throws a much tighter ball than Manziel ever did?
Yeah, but they're very similar. I mean, I think Manziel actually threw a pretty decent ball.
He threw a lot of risky jump balls, too.
Josh Allen, I think, is more risky than Baker, though.
Agree.
So unknown. He's a wild unknown. So what do you think they should do? You could even just go position. You don't have to pick a player.
I think I've come to a really weird place in my life where I'm against taking running backs early.
Yeah.
That said, if no one would trade up, if I were the Browns, I would trade down. A couple picks I could.
Sure.
If I could, first option would be trade down because the number one pick in the draft is so overvalued in the moment.
Yeah.
It's a commodity that you sometimes never have again. I don't think they could worry too much that Darnold, Rosen, they can't worry that they're going to be Hall of Famers unless they know there's one. If they don't know there's one, then they should trade down. And if I were them, I would take Saquon Barkley, mm-hmm. a combination, and Quentin Nelson,
Wait,
the guard of Notre Dame.
All spring you've been saying don't draft a running back high. You can't go Saquon Barkley. I have 100 quotes from you.
Right. Only if you could trade down with either New York or the Jets and still get Saquon Barkley. If I could trade down two spots, one spot even, just flip-flop, because the Niners picked up 3 third-round draft picks.
You're going against your own principles.
I'm going against my own grain.
You are. You really are.
But you know why? Because of the Tyrod Taylor factor.
Yeah, the win now.
And I think the Browns are probably going to stink and have a top 5 pick next year, and they could still get a quarterback. But I don't know if they can get the best offensive lineman and the best best running back. Now, the only other thing I would do, I think I would take, but I don't think Rosen wants to be there. That vibe came from somewhere.
Yeah, of course. I totally agree with that. Let's put number two. I'll take the Giants. I'll take Saquon. I think they stick with Eli, a quarterback. And I don't think they want another quarterback with Eli in the room right now, even if Darnold's there. So just I'm playing it safe here. I'm going Saquon Barkley.
If I were the New York Giants, if I couldn't trade down, which I'd love to trade, I would take Josh Rosen because they haven't had a top 5 draft pick in 20 years.
Yeah.
They're not going to have one for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
And Josh Rosen can sit for 1 year, and he's 21 years old. 1 year won't kill him. What's the name? Phillip Rivers sat for 3. Aaron Rodgers set for 3.5. And you set him for 1 year, you get out of Eli Manning comfortably. The fans will co-sign on it.
Yeah. All right, I'm fine with that. Number three, New York Jets. I would say the most likely, if Baker's not there, then they'll take the leftover of Darnold or Rosen.
If I were the New York Jets, I would take the best non-quarterback in the draft. If it's Quentin Nelson, the offensive lineman, if it's Bradley Chubb.
Oh, no way. The Jet, that's the one. If they don't take a quarterback, they've been drafting safeties and defensive linemen for 10 years.
You're saying will, I'm saying should.
You're saying they should not draft a quarterback?
No.
Oh, my gosh. You've got to be kidding me. They have to draft a quarterback. There's never been a team in the history of the NFL that's needed to draft a quarterback.
I think they need to find some talent that so when a quarterback goes there, he doesn't get destroyed.
They've had talent all over the field. They had talent all over the field even last year. They have, like, top 5 picks at every position.
When they had a talented team and they handed over the reins to Mark Sanchez, remember they had a good offensive line and a good defensive line and linebackers and receivers, even Jericho Cotchery and Dustin Keller and good running backs. They had a deep team of B players. And Mark Sanchez played well for 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah, no, that was an – I don't think
that's just my theory.
I think that they need to build around the quarterback. I mean, it's about time. There's got to be new quarterbacks against Tom Brady. It's just been too long. And I think there's so much public pressure to take a quarterback. They took Jamal Adams last year, a safety at number 6, who's great, and it made zero win impact.
Okay, with the 4th pick, the Browns are back on the clock. And in my theory, let's say they've taken whoever it may be. Let's say they took Saquon Barkley or a quarterback. I would try to get someone to bite, even if it's just Buffalo to bite to go up to 4 and give
Arizona,
you 2 first-round picks.
Yeah,
or Arizona, or even just Denver to flip-flop a spot and move back a spot and take either Bradley Chubb or Quentin Nelson.
Well, I think you might have to take Chubb here.
You might.
Yeah, and I think you should.
Unless you get an assurance from Denver saying, we're going up to do this. Because that's what San Francisco knew who they were giving up the spot to get. To lose, I guess.
Yeah, I would say the most like consensus mock drafts is Chubb, assuming Barkley's not there.
Okay, what do you think Denver's going to do?
If I was going to write a mock draft today, I would give him a quarterback. I don't want them to because I want Case Keenum to be untouched. So if Josh Allen's there, I think they'll trade down. But if Josh Allen and Josh Rosen's there, they'll look at them. Quentin Nelson, I would say, is the other pick. So I'd say top quarterback available.
You know, the fifth pick to take the fourth-ranked quarterback in the draft to me seemed a little high for Denver.
Yeah. I don't think they want to take a quarterback. I think they want to trade down.
If I were them, I would trade down and take Lamar Jackson or Mason Rudolph, who they could groom, and they don't spend that value of a pick on him. Because you wasted one on Paxton Lynch. Trevor Siemian's basically a non-factor. Case Keenum gets 2 years, and then he moves on somewhere else. But if I were Denver, I would definitely trade out.
I would actually bite on Quentin Nelson here because I think the guard out of Notre Dame will be gone a few picks after. And I don't think you're going to get a Quentin Nelson at 13, 14, 15.
If at the sixth pick, if the Colts have Quentin Nelson on the board out of Notre Dame and don't take him, if I'm Andrew Luck, I retire. I'm like, help me out.
Yeah. you see a lot of Denzel Ward, Derwin James. I'll go the best defensive player. Let's say Denzel Ward or Derwin James, either of them.
All right, I'm going to run a few guys by you. These are just guys I like in the draft. I really like wide receiver Christian Kirk out of Texas A&M.
Oh, love him.
I think he's only about 5'11". He's pretty thick. He's built like a tailback. He's a great return man, great slot receiver. He's one of those guys who doesn't have the measurables, I guess they say, for height. But I don't know if you compare him to like a Hines Ward all-purpose player. I don't know if that's the right comparison or not because I don't even know size and speed of Hines Ward. But Christian Kirk kicked everybody's ass in college.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a guy. Who is the guy on the Jaguars who dominated in college? He's like a Dede Westbrook.
Yes, a Dede Westbrook.
Which I think is good.
A really nice pickup. He was hurt a little last year.
Yeah, he had Kirk has pretty decent speed. I think he's going to be productive.
I think you get a good second or third wide receiver, slot receiver, and a great return man. All for the same price, even though the return game's almost out of the game.
The one guy I don't like, and I don't want him to be Tavon Austin, because I thought that Tavon Austin got drafted, and it turned out he couldn't run big boy wide receiver
routes.
But I think Kirk can.
Yeah. The other guy I really like, Josh Jackson, the defensive back at Iowa. Yeah, I watch a lot of Iowa football.
Yeah.
He's a very athletic guy. I played some wide receiver. And then my boy, Dallas Goedert, the tight end of South Dakota State, two-time FCS All-American.
I've seen a lot of different rankings of the tight ends. This guy, and I don't even know, Hayden Hurst, the tight end out of South Carolina, is high. And then there's Gesicki from Penn State. To me, seems like, because he's the guy we saw the most of, Paul. Isn't he the guy? Like, he looks like an obvious star to me. I don't understand. What's the downside of him?
Sounds like a Packer or a Bear, Gesicki.
Yeah. But let me ask you about a couple guys. There's a guy, and I mentioned him on the show last Sunday night. Marcus Davenport is an edge rusher out of Texas San Antonio. Now, we've never heard of Texas San Antonio football, but he's one. I like small school pass rushers who have ridiculous size and speed. Now, I know we're not measurable. It's like we're going against our own rules here, but the fact that he's 6'4", runs like a 4'5", I feel like that's where you want a small school guy, a defensive end.
Sometimes I think you're right because I think I would take that small school dominant guy over an Alabama defender who's over-publicized because he was on this dominant defense and never got double teamed because he's got four All-Americans next to him.
Absolutely. Let me ask you, you know who else I like? I've come around. Lamar Jackson, I think, will be an immediate hit in the NFL because he can run.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to win 3 Super Bowls. I just think that he can plug into any offense and help them.
The greatest thing, if they can convince Lamar Jackson to not run and save that threat for when he needs it.
Like Russell Wilson?
Well, also, I would compare him more to, imagine year 5 Randall Cunningham. Randall Cunningham was run first and then pass second. Mm. I think nobody is comparing Lamar Jackson to Randall Cunningham, and that's a great comparison because
I don't. Does he have the arm strength? Randall Cunningham had the best arm in the NFL.
Right, but I don't know if we knew that coming out of UNLV.
No, absolutely not. You're right. We had no idea. That's a good point.
I remember I went to a Bears game, Randall Cunningham's rookie year, and when it was 3rd and long, they would bring him in spot situations to do designated quarterback runs in place of Ron Jaworski.
You don't have to tell me about that. I was in Section 727 watching it, and I was like, why are you playing Jaws at all?
Right, but he was so exciting, but everyone's like, well, he's just a runner, and he'll never be a passer. At his peak, Randall Cunningham was as good as anybody, and as good as anybody else. I think Randall Cunningham's peak is better than Michael Vick's peak.
He's my favorite player, yeah.
I think he's quite underrated.
It's interesting he had a very interesting career. I think there was still some racial bias against him in Philadelphia.
Sure.
There was a lot of that in the NFL way back when. This idea there was like, you'd hear reports, oh, he's not smart enough to run the team. Let's put him Bobby Brister. But he had terrible coaches. Rich Kotite was his coach. He was terrible. Then he went to Minnesota and killed it. That dude could throw the ball 90 yards on the fly. He's like Josh Allen Armstrong.
Yeah, when he hit his stride, 25, 26, 27, Randall Cunningham, three straight Pro Bowls. He averaged about 25 touchdowns and 13 interceptions a season. He was really hitting his stride. He was never, ever a great percentage passer because he rolled so much and gambled so much. But as a runner, you know, he was never like a 1,000-yard runner. One time he ran for 942. But he had the threat of running, which was dangerous. And if Lamar Jackson can be that threat guy who doesn't run very much, and when he runs, he's like, I'm fine with 7 yards. But once in a while, if I decide to cut it back in, you guys are going to be messed up.
Totally.
I'm going to run it past you.
My issue, though, and I don't know, Michael Vick, when he throws a ball to me, it's the most beautiful thing in the world. It's an 80-yard spiral down the field. It's gorgeous.
To whom?
Regardless.
Yeah.
It just looks like his form, like it looks amazing. Randall Cunningham, same way. He would throw these gorgeous bombs. Lamar Jackson's throwing style is so unorthodox. He's a quick release. It just, you don't see him wind up. Randall Cunningham.
Is that a good thing?
I don't know. I'm not sure, but you don't see the beautiful Michael Vick spirals out of Lamar Jackson. I don't know if that means anything. I think he could be good, and it doesn't. Like we've said, it's not arm strength; it's where the ball goes.
Also, situation, place he goes to is going to dictate.
Oh,
everything.
That's everything. Better not go to Cincinnati. I do not need him on Andy Dalton's.
I'm going to agree with you there. If Cincinnati takes a quarterback in the first round, they're doing their team a disservice because Andy Dalton is not at the point where he should be replaced. Get some more people around him and try for a couple more years, but he is a B-plus quarterback in this league.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying that. I'm not even saying that it's a mistake. I'm just saying I hope they don't do that because then the second he struggles. Okay, one more. I had mentioned this guy to you today at the Dan Patrick Show. Calvin Ridley out of Alabama. I like him.
6'1", 212. He looks smaller when I saw him on the field just because of the big guys around him.
Yeah, I feel like he's a guy whose measurables might not be there, we talked about production.
I would say this. I watch a lot of Alabama. We all have.
Sure.
And Calvin Ridley never had a passing quarterback to catch from and still put up a lot of stats.
Yeah, you always knew he was there. He was dangerous.
It reminds me of Julio Jones, even though he's completely different body style, that the college production was never huge because it's not a passing offense. And Julio had better quarterbacks.
Care to take a quick guess at Lance Zierlein, NFL.com's NFL comparison for Calvin Ridley?
Antonio Brown.
No, not bad. All-time, one of the leading receivers as far as catches goes, Marvin Harrison.
Oh.
That's a nice comparison.
I think he's more explosive than Marvin Harrison with the ball.
Right, but I doubt he's as – I mean, that's a high bar.
Marvin Harrison was a sick route runner.
Oh, dude, I mean, like, yeah. I mean, how many catches does he have? It's like a million.
Look at me breaking down route running. All right, coming up next, this is exciting. If you like the show Billions on Showtime, Dollar Bill Stern, one of the tough guys over at Axe Capital from – he's the actor Kelly O'Coyne. He joins us next on the Leisureman. Back on the Leisureman podcast, this is one of the friends of the Leisureman, Perloff. This is Kelly O'Coyne, actor from Billions. You know him from, he's Pastor Tim on the Americans, which a lot of people know him from. But I think he's really starting to steamroll America with his role of Dollar Bill Stern on Billions on Showtime. Kelly, good to have you back on the show, bud.
Thanks, man. Steamrolling America. I like that. That works.
That sounds like a shirt. It sounds like a shirt your character might wear on a show. All right. Now, we are not actors. We've been in Sandler movies, so we don't really know much about the process of a little bit of acting. But I'm more curious with the show like Billions. When you go into season three, there was a lot of radical changes on the show, like what main character Axe is getting divorced, they move to New York City. In the off season, when you start getting the scripts, do you find out what's going to happen to the whole tone of the season in those first scripts you get? Or do the producers have a meeting with the main characters and cast members and go over things?
Well, first of all, I want to clarify. Did you say Sailor movies?
Sandler movies.
Oh, Sandler movies. Okay, that makes sense. There was something.
I wish we were in Sailor movies.
Well, yeah. Who doesn't want to be in Sailor movies?
Hey, you had to get through college somehow, Kelly. You know what I mean?
It was a phase. It was a phase.
Okay. Good to know. I'll file that away. So it's interesting. I don't know. I would imagine that Damian, Maggie, Malin and Paul had at least an idea of what was coming, but from everything I know, I certainly don't get any sort of outline or clue about what's going to happen, other than them telling me you're going to be on the show, and don't do anything starting September, which is a good sign, and they're going to use me somehow. But most people I talk to, both on the Americans and Billions and other shows, they generally find out, at least they find out the details the week before before we start shooting an episode. For me, it's I find out everything about a week before when the scripts drop. And then we have a table read before we start the episode, and that's when you really start to hear things fleshed out. But, yeah, it's very last minute.
When Billions season one, I've been watching since day one. In the first season, I didn't notice a ton of buzz around it. Season two was completely different. And then there seems to be, it almost felt like a launch in season three when the first episode came. You guys were all on social media, live tweeting the event. Did it feel quite different for you when season three started and when you're watching on TV?
That's cool. I'm glad it felt that way. It definitely feels like it's picked up steam. I felt like the second half of the first season felt much more buzzy. It's hard for me to know because I'm in the bubble, but felt a little bit more buzzy than the first half. And then season two definitely felt like people were really keying into it and really claiming it, you know. And the third season, absolutely. It feels like we're in terms of popular zeitgeist, it feels like we're on the rise a bit, which is nice. That's great.
Kelly, you're one of my favorite follows on Twitter, Kelly O'Coin, at Kelly O'Coin 77. But it's funny because you on Twitter is a lot different than Dollar Bill Stern as a person.
I hope so.
But I love when you are
swearing at everybody.
Right. Not exactly. I love when you retweet Billions writers. I don't know if you follow us during the show, Paul, but it's like the great quotes. The writing of the show is so sharp. You could almost pull out those quotes and have a funny story, even if you don't see the episode. How much do you appreciate the writing?
Oh, the writing's fantastic. I mean, look, we don't get to rehearse on TV, you know. You get to basically have one blocking rehearsal where you figure out where you're going to stand, and then you do it for lights and then whatever, and then you shoot. So it's really important that you have specific, dynamic, character-driven writing, because you get the clues and you get better and better as you go along. We've been doing it for three years now. You get better at picking up those clues and understanding where they want the character to go, you know. And then of course you put your spin on it. But I cannot express, if I had the writers sitting in front of me on a couch, I would give them all a hug and maybe an inappropriate kiss, because they're brilliant. They're brilliant. Well, specific.
One of the things I like about it, Kelly, is when you guys are doing the show, there's a lot of references, you know, 80s, 90s, 2000s references, and they're really quick and really sneaky. And the character of one of the characters said Hassan Chop on the show the other day, which is a cartoon reference from like the 70s and 80s. And it was Wag's character. And everyone kind of reacted to that on Twitter. And it's funny how the sneakiest little line. I've also wondered about the process when you're on set and you said you don't get a lot of takes. Do you ever try a line, and it's a line that's written, and if you want to change it, do you just do it in the other take? And do you have to actually ask permission? If I don't know if that's the right word.
Go ahead.
Let's say you want to change a line and ad-lib the next take or the seventh take or whatever it may be, and vice versa. Do sometimes a line that's written, it just doesn't play well, and the writers come over and say switch in midstream?
The writers have, every once in a while, the writers will say, Brian or David will say, try this, say this, or they'll write something and email it to us on the spot. We don't ad-lib. Everything you see up on the screen, including stutters and weird gestures and things, tend to be written or are absolutely scripted. So it just, I would not ad lib. I don't think it needs it. I don't think it would be appreciated because they are so good. I know that there are some shows where they do that, but this is definitely a follow the script show. And the great thing is we've got a lot of facile actors who can make it sound like they're ad-libbing or sound like they're going off the cuff a bit, and that's fun. You know, that's the challenge of it, but also great writing can have that feel. You know, it can feel more natural than some more spontaneous improvised moments, actually, which people don't necessarily understand.
Kelly, you know, one of the things about the show, and I'm not even sure if you're going to like this question, but it's so politically incorrect, and these are politically correct times. And I have no idea what the politics of the people on the show are, but isn't it kind of interesting that you know, this is like sort of an old school do anything for money mentality that I think people kind of a guilty pleasure appreciate. Do you recognize any of that?
Interesting question. I think I don't think the show lets anybody off the hook. You know, yeah. I don't think that it makes the case that Dollar Bill is a good man or that Dollar Bill is a happy man necessarily, for instance.
Right. Or maybe a loyal man.
Definitely a loyal man. And somehow he keeps his two wives from
from too many vans
filing suit against him. So I think there is, look, for me, I mean, just on a personal level, playing a character that is pretty much the antithesis of my values is cathartic and interesting. It is often much more interesting to explore your opposite, to find the things about yourself in these characters that you initially think are just like, well, I'm nothing like that. Well, maybe you are. Maybe you can find a way to key into that.
You referenced a story.
If I didn't do that, I wouldn't have been able to smash a car into another
right.
car.
You referenced a storyline from season one where the FBI is trying to get you to flip, and they catch you having two families, and you embrace it, and you send out the note. It'd be really funny if you guys did like a social media thing where they follow Dollar Bill home from work, and you have two dinners and two nights watching TV and two nights out Friday and Saturday. All right, the one thing, I was watching your show with my wife the other night. And it was the episode where the Elon Musk-type character, the young inventor-type character, is trying to fly this dock with a space station and fly to Mars someday. And everyone's watching, the whole world's watching this radical inventor guy. And the people at Axe Capital have shorted the stock, which means that you're hoping for it to fail from a business standpoint. And when the thing crashes, my wife was like, oh, my God, it crashes, and the inventor dies of the rocket ship. And there's a pause for only about 2 seconds, and the whole room is horrified. Then your character, Dollar Bill, goes, am I going to say it? Am I going to be the first to say it? And you, like, pump your fist, yeah, because you knew everyone in the building just made a lot of money. It's right. It's as dark of a line as you could possibly mm-hmm. have as an actor, and I guess not ever, but it's the thing everyone was thinking, but no one would actually say. And my wife goes, oh, my God. And it was almost worse you saying the line than the actual crash. When you get that in the script, you're like, oh, this is perfect for my character.
Yes, absolutely. Mm. It's juicy.
Yeah.
And again, if I had
it's
been...
It's cringeworthy.
It's cringeworthy, absolutely. And it's so on point. It's so mm-hmm. Dollar Bill. It's so, he's such a blunt instrument. He's so so bottom line. And his loyalties are to his families to a certain degree, not one over the other, obviously, but his families, to the little dollar bills and to Axe Cap and Bobby and what we have there, what we've created, and to money. So it makes perfect sense. And again, it is, if I had been in the room, I would have hated that guy personally.
Right.
Kelly would have hated that guy in that moment. But it is so fun to play that. It's so fun to play that. I mean, and he's thrilled. It's fun to play right. Euphoria, no matter what's sparking the euphoria.
As a person who has a dark little point in my mind, I was like, I was so jealous as an actor you got to drop that line because it's like, it was so cringeworthy, but in a great way. All right, I want to go actually darker now, and I hate to bring this up, but you are
Trailblazers.
A huge Trailblazers. We should have had you on 2 weeks ago when there's hope. I got a question for you, and I'm being very serious. Yeah. I don't understand the Trailblazers. Their backcourt is as good and underrated as any backcourt in recent history.
Yeah.
And they seem to be stagnating as a franchise. Can you put your finger on it as a fan?
It's hard. It was an unusually balanced team, I suppose. And it really started to look like the parts besides McCollum and Lillard, or Mick Lillard as some like to call it.
Yeah,
that they were starting to gel. You know, Ed Davis, for one, was sort of this glue guy. He was almost becoming like I can't think of who right now, but somebody who was who just wreaked the havoc that kept everything moving. And we know the 13-game win streak near the end, and then all of a sudden it just stopped working. And partially, Dame hurt his ankle. Davis got hurt. Mo Harkless, who was another sort of key to that reckless abandon kind of group, I lumped him in with Davis.
Right.
And we got thrown off. I don't know. It was...
Wait, it's weird.
I knew... I thought we might win in seven. I knew it was going to be hard. You know, we were only, what, two games ahead of even the eighth place team. So I'm shocked. I'm still stunned.
I know.
It's 2 weeks later.
I could tell you're depressed about this one.
Kelly, I'll give you a trade. All right. CJ McCollum reportedly on the trading block. It's been I don't know if that will actually happen. If I offered you Kevin Love of the Cavs for CJ McCollum, would you do it?
No.
Would you trade anyone for CJ, or do you want to stick there?
Yeah, how about this
one,
Kelly?
I love CJ. I love CJ. And so I still hold out hope that this backcourt can be built around. I don't know who we'd need to make that happen. Maybe we could get, if the Pelicans hadn't done as well as they did, I don't know if you heard they swept the first round series.
Sure.
We might have been able to swing for Boogie or something, you know, but that's obviously not going to happen now.
I think Boogie Cousins is a true free agent this offseason.
I would go for him. And not as a trade, but I would go. I'm not talking about a trade right now. I just mean I would throw everything I could at him. And I know there's a risk.
Could you sweeten the deal with a cameo on Billions for Boogie Cousins? You got that kind of talent.
Oh my God. I would give him my role. He could play dollar bill. I would sacrifice my role on Billions. Not really. But in order for the Trailblazers to win a championship.
Boogie Cousins in khaki pants, a polo shirt, and like a Vineyard Vines vest would be odd.
No one would notice if all of a sudden season four Boogie Cousins showed up as you.
Everyone easy transition.
Like, yeah, I don't think anyone would know.
No, I don't think they'd know either because we both got game. I'm a great free throw shooter. I think he's pretty decent too.
It's like switching Darren's and Bewitched.
Yeah. What's that? Yeah.
It's like switching Darren's and Bewitched from Dick York to that other guy.
A little different. Little size different. All right, last question. Andrew Perloff here, my co-host, is a huge fan of the Philadelphia 76ers. Mm-hmm. I want you to put your playoff analyst hat on. He thinks that the Sixers are the favorite to come out of the East right now. I think he's getting a little dizzy, a little caught up. Who would you pick to win the East right now?
Good question. I don't think he's far off. I think Philly's playing ridiculously well. And I would say, I was still thinking the Celtics, I'll go with the 76ers. Yeah, let's do it.
All right. He's on your bandwagon.
Yeah, I feel like the Blazers and Sixers are kindred spirits. I think Kelly and I are together in this one. I like it.
Right.
Beautiful.
Right. All right. Except you're still playing.
All right. We're going to have you on from time to time, talk a little Billions, talk a little hoop. What's the one morsel for your character, Dollar Bill Stern, for the rest of the season that we should keep an eye out for? The moment that you're like, I can't wait till this episode drops.
Well,
a morsel.
Definitely
it could
last
be little.
Week's episode was the first one of the season. I would say pay attention to the next few episodes. Keep an eye out for the next on the next few episodes.
It gets darker?
I never want a hint, you know. Every time I think
that's
I know where the show's going, I get surprised, and it's better than I think. So I kind of want to leave that for the fans to experience that.
Oh, that's great. Hey, thanks for coming on. We'll talk to you here and there throughout the playoffs, and keep an eye on Billions. Kelly Coyne, actor, thanks a lot for coming on.
Absolutely. It's always great.
Take care, brother.
Bye.
There you go.
That was fun.
Another, we recruited him to my Sixers bandwagon now that his Blazers are gone.
Right, and I think what's interesting in here is we've had him on the Leisureman Show twice now, and both times we have not asked him to be extras in Billions, which is really our end goal as, you know, because we're shallow.
Yeah.
Right. So maybe, you know, season four, then we could drop that on him, and he'll say no, and then he'll feel guilty because it's on air, and he'll have to say yes. Actually, we're not going to do that.
We're totally going to do that. Shoots in the area. Are you kidding me, Paul? I understand.
All right, a little more hoop talk next, Leisureman.
All right, Paul, I feel like you've been a real champion for just the show Billions. You've gotten me into it. Now, it's interesting that you could take a show and put the word out. Do you have a next show on deck? Because this season's going to be over before you know it, in the blink of an eye.
I do.
Do you have your show next? What is it?
I think I do. I watched a show the other day, and I think they're about a month into it. It's I don't even know what channel it's on. It's called Barry, and it's Bill Hader, the great actor, comedian. I call him comedian, actor. He was on SNL forever. He's always like got sidekick roles in movies. He got the starring role with Amy Schumer in Trainwreck. And now this new show is called Barry. I don't know what channel.
It's HBO.
HBO. It's a half-hour show. It's about a guy who's a hitman, and his life's going nowhere, and he goes to L.A. to do a hit on someone, and he stumbles into becoming an actor. that old bit.
Yeah.
It's if you like the movie Gross Point Blank with John Cusack.
Oh, wow. That's a high recommendation from you. That's
I
like
love
your favorite.
Oh, I love Gross Point Blank. And if you like Gross Point Blank, it's like if they took the movie Gross Point Blank and made it into a TV show. It's dark, it's awkward, and it's cool. And it's Bill Hader, so it's probably going to be fantastic.
Okay,
my
show is going to be Westworld. Now, I thought, I talk about it all the time, I thought it was going to be the next Game of Thrones. So it did a huge rating. I mean, it's like, it rates higher than pretty much anything.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I don't even know the premise of Westworld. I thought it was about a Western town, and then I heard it's like people controlling a Western town from outer space or something. Is that incorrect?
That's incorrect. You don't remember the movie Westworld with Yul Brynner? You never heard of that guy?
Never even heard of it.
It's a movie where this is a fictional world of cowboys that are really robots where you go on vacation. It's like Disney World. So it's like Jurassic Park. Instead of dinosaurs, there's robotic cowboys and other things, and you get to live out these Western fantasies.
Well, I would watch that. Why didn't you tell me that was the premise?
Yeah, I thought you'd seen the movie.
And
no. You don't remember Yul Brynner was a robot cowboy in 1973?
In the 70s, the only movies I saw starred Burt Reynolds. If Burt Reynolds wasn't in it, my dad and I
would thought Yul Brynner, I know that your dad was a big Charles Bronson fan too, probably.
I don't know. My dad liked Burt Reynolds and Clint Eastwood, and that's about it.
So anyway, so I thought Westworld was the heir apparent. It has so many big names. It has everyone behind it. J.J. Abrams.
Is it not the big one?
So the ratings dipped a slight bit for the opening, less than they thought it was going to be.
Do you think it's too cerebral? And I haven't seen it, but
I do. But Game of Thrones is pretty cerebral.
Game of Thrones is the kill.
Yeah, but Game of Thrones in season two had not hit yet.
Well, but Game of Thrones knows at some point we got to give you a kill that blows your doors off, a murder.
It
goes back to that Sopranos thing.
Yes.
Someone has to die in every episode.
I misunderstood you. Okay, you're saying it's the kill that attracts us to Game of Thrones. Absolutely.
Yes, Game of Thrones has the most creative ways of people dying that I've seen, and I haven't seen every episode. And I always thought the Sopranos, it seemed like every episode someone had to go.
Yeah, and that was such a game changer in major television that someone could die. That's a brilliant point. The problem in Westworld, if someone dies, and that has happened a lot, you don't know if they're a human or a robot. So Anthony Hopkins died in the last episode of season one, but we're like, we don't even know if he's a real person. So, and we don't know if he's going to come back. There's something missing, and that's why the ratings, I think it's too cerebral, and you don't have that investment.
Knowing me, should I try Westworld?
No. I mean,
did you just insult me there?
Well, I don't know. All right, let me ask you about these actors. You like Ed Harris?
I love Ed Harris.
Do you like Anthony Hopkins?
I like him. I appreciate his work.
Do you like Jeffrey Wright, who played Basquiat?
I love Jeffrey Wright.
He's the main star.
I would put Jeffrey Wright in everything.
Do you remember Evan Rachel Wood?
She's strong.
Thandie Newton.
Yeah, she's all right.
James Marsden, who...
The hunky James Marsden?
Yeah, who came... Him. It was in 30 Rock. He's
way
one
too
of the good stars. Looking,
that guy.
Yeah, well, Ed Harris alone. You got Ed Harris and Jeffrey Wright. Yeah, the acting, but it is sci-fi as all get out.
Do you ever feel bad for people who are stunningly good-looking that they can't be taken seriously as an actor? Because I don't know if you know who James Marsden is, but if you Google him, you'll find out pretty quick that he's a good-looking dude. But now he's on probably the wrong side of 40. Let me guess, he's 44 years old, James Marsden.
Something like that, yeah.
But when he was in his 20s, I remember seeing him in movies, and he was always like the good-looking dude.
Yeah.
He was the husband in The Notebook who was perfect. Or the guy she was going to marry in The Notebook, and he's too good-looking, too rich, too handsome. He plays handsome guys in movies.
But since you don't follow sci-fi, he was Cyclops in the X-Men movie, which is basically his career, but you've never seen a single X-Men
movie.
But
even he was probably a handsome Cyclops.
Yeah, well, Cyclops was super handsome, except that if he took his glasses off, he would burn up the whole building. But you don't know that. It's amazing. By the way, Avengers is coming out this weekend. Every time it comes up, you're like, you are so dismissive. It's only going to be the most successful movie of all time. Does that mean anything to you?
Then they don't need my money. They're fine. Like, I feel bad for the indie movie that 17 people are going to see. I'll go see that and give them my $12.
Bradley Cooper, Chris Pratt, Robert Downey Jr., Tom Hiddleston.
Okay.
Hemsworth. There's 50 major stars in this movie.
Do you know what bothers me about these movies?
What?
That you could put me, you, Kelly Acoin, Rob Stats Guerrera, and whoever you want from over here at NBC. We get Liam McHugh. We can go get the guys down in security. And they put us in these suits with CGI, and they give us the right lines to say, and I swing a sword, and we're the same. The result would be the same. And they hire these high-end actors just so they could put their names on the marquee. And these actors must be looking at each other going, I can't believe we're getting paid $20 million each. For a CGI film that we just stand there for a couple hours a day and then they move stuff around us.
You've never seen these movies, so how do you know? Robert Downey Jr. was the only reason the movie Iron Man worked. You've seen that one.
I'll tell you, that's damn fright. If you take out Robert Downey Jr., I like Iron Man. I like the concept.
Oh, if you took Robert Downey Jr. out of it, that would be a D movie.
Right. Like, there was a movie, is it Green Lantern with Seth Rogen?
Is that right? Green Lantern.
Green Hornet?
Green Hornet is Seth Rogen. Green Lantern is the one that was really bad with the guy from Deadpool that we love.
Well, I almost went and saw that Seth Rogen superhero movie because it's Seth Rogen.
And it was a comedy?
And I saw Ant-Man because of Paul Rudd, and it was good.
Ant-Man was great. And by the way, I don't think Ant-Man's in this, or maybe he is. But
he should be.
Green Lantern was Ryan Reynolds, which was terrible, but then he killed it in Deadpool. But Chris Pratt made Guardians of the Galaxy 1 because he was so good in Parks and Rec.
Deadpool and Ant-Man are great because they're not traditional. Yes. They're very snarky.
Robert Downey Jr., too. Very funny.
All right, last thing. You know what is the new hot trend? And I don't know if it's how new it is, but it's very, very popular right now to celebrate birthdays for middle-aged people in America.
What?
Middle-aged couples in America, what they do when they're going to celebrate, break the bank, go on a birthday. Brewery tours. Brewery tours are becoming a really big thing. You rent a bus, get a bunch of friends together, and drive all over the state that you're in and go to brews. I've got like four of them on schedule for the next 4 months of my life.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's not because of me, because even though I love them, like, a buddy of mine is having a brewery tour for his wife, and we're going all over Southern Connecticut to these little breweries. There's nowhere in America you could live anymore where within an hour of your house there's not four breweries. Because Connecticut's not a beer hotbed, not like Vermont or Oregon or whatever state you want to throw in there, Wisconsin. But even
I'm sensing that you have something that you don't love about this brewery tour trend.
I worry that there's a bubble with these small craft breweries, and we talked about this for 2 years on Leisureman. But so far, financially, there isn't. There hasn't been. Because you could, I think if you start a craft brewery, you could want to be Sam Adams, or you could want to be a cool little local hangout that brews some beer and makes a couple bucks and it's a passion project. Because there's one I just ran by in Redding, Connecticut, and it was called like Nod Hill Brewing Company.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, we're fine. You know, make a couple bucks, have a cool little place to hang out in Redding, Connecticut. And if something happens where it gets big, the guy's like, that's great too. But this guy, it was not his main source of income. So it was a passion project.
Interesting. So basically, if I get invited to one of these, Paulie, should I go or should I not go?
I would go.
Though, you know, I'm not a beer guy, but is it fun time?
It is. But some people, because they're not driving and they're on this tour bus and they're at a brewery, they start over drinking because they think there's no consequences. And so you'll see some people on this bus at the end of the tour that are in no condition to do anything, much less drive.
Wow. What happened to the old house party? Like the one, people just don't have a house party on their birthday?
Oh, that's so 90s.
I love house parties.
I do too. You don't have to leave the house. All right, thanks for listening to the Leisureman Podcast. Thanks to our buddy, actor Kelly O'Coin. He's Dollar Bill Stern on Billions and Pastor Tim on The Americans. He's a great actor, good friend of the show.
Yeah, and solid Blazers fan, isn't giving up on the franchise.
Even this year, he still thinks they have a chance this year. And don't forget, Sunday night, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern on NBC Sports Radio, the live Leisureman radio show. Enjoy the draft. Talk to you soon.